Talk given Friday, 9th May 1975. Let us start today by recalling that at the last group weekend in March, we looked into the condition in which one finds oneself when one is in the state of supreme communion. Bear in mind the fundamental point in this connection. In supreme communion, there is that state of total unselfedness possible because there has been a complete transformation of our mode of awareness of existence, of all existence, of the one total reality. And that this complete transformation of the mode of awareness is the full flowering, the culminating point of all the religiousness in us which has come to fruition. And the basis of that coming to fruition has been essentially the perfect morality, the constant mindfulness, the freedom from all grasping, the utter purification of the mind and heart. This is the fundamental basis. And it means that that particular individual of the human species has fulfilled the purpose of his existence, and that he is at last the perfect human being. Therefore, there is this transformation of the mode of awareness of existence as a permanent realization. And one of the outstanding characteristics of this transformation is that the great illusion brought about by separative self-consciousness of oneself being the observing subject and the rest of the universe as being the object has disappeared. That illusion has vanished at last. This separation of self and not self is the fundamental root of our dualistic conflicting existence. And that conflict is laid to rest forever in terms of a transcendent realization which remains a permanent state of awareness, of consciousness. Recollect also something that was put forward then, that in this state, you, who have reached the end point, so to say, of your development as a human being, as you go about your everyday life, using your senses, you are not the only user of your senses. Transcendence itself, the totality, utilizes you. You are the living vehicle of transcendence. And when you look at anything, there is a seeing by transcendence through your eyes, and transcendence sees its own infinity, its own transcendence through your eyes. And at the same time, you see this infinity in every single finite object and person. But your part of the seeing is no longer of the same nature as it was in the imperfect state, the state where we are subject to this tragic separation between self and not self. You see the object as it is, and you will discover a curious thing, that it is almost impossible to describe that particular object as it is when you see it now in your perfect state. At the same time, you also know how others see it. We all see, hear, touch, taste. We all use our senses in an imperfect manner. The outstanding characteristic of this imperfection is that we present our particular interpretation of that which we are seeing or hearing. And our particular interpretation always distorts the reality, because we are seeing actually or hearing our own mental construct of the object or the person. And that construct is the product of the imperfect, the sullied, the ignorant, the incapable, the confused, the frightened mind. So you'll see that when the perfected Holy One, who is the true human, the Son of Man, who is also the Son of God, then, you see, when you are in that perfected state, your seeing and hearing, the use of your senses through daily life, will be utterly different from the seeing and the hearing of the ordinary worldly state. That is the state which is cramped, cabined, confined, subjected, spoiled by worldliness. Now, that worldliness disappears altogether through living the religious life in its fullness, which means, and one can state it once or a million times, and a million times is not too many, The outstanding point is the purification of the mind and the heart, the utter purity of the psyche. So you see differently. But because you have grown into this state through experience, through purification, and realized this supreme condition, you have not forgotten what the sick state, the ill state was. If you forget, then obviously you cannot possibly have compassion for mankind. You cannot love man and serve man and help him because you've forgotten. You are out of touch with him. But you don't forget. You know all, you see all. Your psychical sensitivity, your mental powers grow to such an extent and in such a manner that you can enter into another person's mind and consciousness quite easily. It is as if another human being's soul is an open book to you, which you can read as easily as you take a material book, provided it is written in a language you know, and you open it and read it. Try and really be sensitive, wholly sensitive, to the significance of all this. You may have heard somebody tell you these things before, or perhaps you have not heard these things before. What happens to you, what state you are in, when you have realized the fulfillment of the purpose of your existence, come to complete fruition as a human being? Now you remember, last time, in the latter part of April, we asked ourselves some questions in this connection. There is hardly anything I can say which goes beyond, as far as my capacities go, which hardly goes beyond what has already been said as regards the vision of the end point, the vision of the fruition of man. And we recalled some of the essential points in connection with this, which indicate that in actual practice we are moving along the lines of growth, the trends of growth. Have we grown in good sense? Have we grown in self-knowledge? Have we learned to become quiet and silent? As long as I am in the imperfect state, I impose myself upon my world, the world in which I live, that is to say, my environment. I am struggling with my environment. I am not a blessing to people and to the situation around me. This self-imposition completely vanishes because the illusion of a separate self has gone. I'm no longer conscious of myself as a separate being. There is a total at-one-ment with everything. And when that total at-one-ment is there, this is the real meaning of the atonement as presented in Christian teaching. When that at-one-ment is there, then there is no not-me upon which I can impose myself. There is only the one reality. And I cease to make a noise in the world. I cease to obstruct the real song of life, the music of the spheres, to use a very ancient expression. I cease to be the cacophonous note in this symphony of life. Therefore, I am quiet and silent, of which the outward manifestation is in terms of speech. All my senseless, endless chatter over inconsequential, useless, stupid things, mostly, completely vanishes. It stops. That is the outward sign. The symbol of an inner silence, which is, of course, the real thing. This outer silence is, so to say, like the clothes that a man wears. But the living body is something different from the clothes. And this inner silence is the silence of the flow of thought and feeling, which consists of mere reactions to every stimulus that comes to me, and to every situation that rises up through every day of my life. And you will notice that in every single case, these reactions are tainted by such elements as greed, anger, violence, jealousy, self-concern, impatience, impetuosity. Oh, the list is very, very long. With stupidity, with fear, with delusion, with anxiety, and so forth. So, it is one of the important points that arises, having attended these meetings year after year, have I come to the point where I have realized, at least in some measure, this quietness and silence, realized what it means to live in terms of good sense. See, these are questions we must ask ourselves. I am not the schoolmaster who has asked you to do some homework and for which I will give you some marks, reward you, satisfy your vanity or your egoism about your goodness. or about your skill and capacity. Not for me. You have to ask yourself. And you have to know within yourself that you alone can do the task, can do this work. Why you alone? Because this lies at the very heart of life, of living. You know only too well, as far as your body is concerned, that no other person can breathe on your behalf, or eat and digest and assimilate and reject food or drink on your behalf. No one else's bloodstream can course through your body. It has to do it itself, hasn't it? It is you who are alive. This is the meaning of you in the non-isolative sense, in the sense of the actual fact of existence. Who can deny this fact? Who can go against it? It's the same with the mind and the heart and the spirit. No one else can do it for you. Just as when one is a child, someone else has to prepare food and give it to you. Somebody may stimulate your mind, encourage your heart to grow to its fulfillment, to become purified. But the other person cannot purify your mind and your heart for you. Can't do it. For instance, if you are born a genius, all right, you go through a certain course, a discipline, a technique, your genius flowers out. But can anybody present you with genius if you aren't born with it? Can't do it. The other person can't do it. It rests with you. It is actually a case of alone I did it. And it is also a case of alone I prevented it from happening. Is not this the real tragedy of mankind and the world? How many, within the last 6,000 years alone, have realized fulfillment, who have become the full-fledged Son of Man, the Son of God? How many? 1,000? 10,000? 50,000? Let us be generous. Actually, we've added a lot of noughts to the actual figure. 50,000 in the last 6,000 years. But how many human beings have been born and lived and died in the last 6,000 years? Well over a million human beings. What is 50,000? Drop in the ocean. And yet, the few whom we know of, they are the beacon lights to guide our path. But we have to look. We must not let our eyes be distracted by worldliness. by the buffoonery of mankind. Look at the beauty and the perfection of the lone star in the evening or the morning as it holds the sky. Do you think that that beauty is other than your own beauty? I tell you, it is your beauty which you behold. It is you yourself which somehow is unconsciously reflected in that wonderful sight, the lone star in the early evening or in the dawn. And so when you see the vision, when you really see it, not merely hear another speak of it, although that may inspire you or read about it, when you really see the vision of what it means to be the Son of Man, then when you really see it, that Son of Man is not someone apart from you. You are that. Tattvam asi, that thou art. Don't feel this as if a bait was being thrown before you. It can't be. You're not a fish that is to be caught by a hook, by means of some tempting bait. Because the fish that is caught by a hook dies, doesn't live. I am concerned that we shall live. But if we don't live as true humans, we have lived in vain. Haven't we? Let us come to one or two other points which are deeply involved in this fruition of man, this state of supreme communion. And remember that the state is a constant state, 24 hours, whether you are cooking a meal, whether you are looking after the babies, whether you are sweeping the streets, digging coal. Or doing whatever you are doing. It is a continuous state. Why? How? Because your mode of awareness has become transformed. And in that transformed awareness, transcendence lives through you every split second. And you know it. That's why it is there permanently. So now let us consider one or two other points. Have we practiced true mindfulness? True mindfulness. Are we self-aware in the pure sense, the true sense? That is to say, self-aware without being self-oriented. All people are self-aware in that sense. They look at something and they immediately look at it from the point of view of possessiveness, or, oh, it will be useful to me this way, or I like it, or I dislike it, and all that sad story of man's seeing, looking. and the same with his hearing, the same with his touching. A man sees a beautiful woman, and what happens at once? Remember the words of Jesus? You have been told, you shall not commit adultery. But I say unto you, that he that looketh after a woman with lust in his heart has already committed adultery. If I react with violence, trying to excuse myself sometimes under the name of righteous indignation, if I react with violence when I hear terrible news of other people's violence and evil done in the world, do I not suffer? Will not I suffer the inevitable consequence of my violent thought and feeling? Am I really mindful if I do that? If I am purely mindful, there is no self-orientation in my mindfulness. I am awake to the fact of what is. And believe me, this is so true. When you really experience this, you will know that what I am saying is absolutely true here. When you are truly mindful in that way, whatsoever you are mindful of, there will only be compassion welling out of you towards that to which you are paying attention, and there will be wisdom functioning through your intelligence in relation to that which you are mindful of. You see, these are the meanings of the perfected Holy One. This is how he lives. Do you live that way? Do I live that way? We must each ask ourselves, do I live that way? Don't look at it from the point of view of success and failure. Because if we look at it from the point of view of success or failure, we will suffer from pride, conceit, self-complacency if we say, I was successful. And we'll suffer from remorse, guilt, and self-hate if we say, I have failed. Leave that funny fellow, the I, out of the picture. Leave him out of the picture. So don't look at it from the standpoint of success and failure. The Lord God doesn't measure anybody's achievement. Does not. Remember that parable? Man coming at the 11th hour was paid the same amount as the man who worked all 12 hours. That's what that means. There is no measurement in terms of transcendence or the infinite. How can you measure where the infinite is concerned? This is the extraordinary thing about it all. So don't think in terms of success and failure. Because that is always self-oriented. I succeeded, I failed. The totality suffers. The totality reaps joy and benefit. Whatsoever happens through me, the living organism, there is no balance sheet afterwards to be presented to the lords of fate or justice in some spiritual cosmos for reward or punishment. None at all. The consequence is here now, immediate. And the consequence is here now and immediate, not only for you or for me, but for the totality. For the simple reason that we are all bound up. If I commit a murder and I'm executed, just let us assume that, if I commit a murder and I'm executed, do not all my family, my friends undergo terrible suffering? Do not so many people reading about the case and so forth say, oh, serve that fellow right. He was a beastly murderer, terrible, cruel murder he committed, and serve him right, he was executed. And so in them arises hate and violence. All because we are self-oriented, not mindful. If we were mindful, there'd be only compassion, there'd be only wisdom. If today in our world, which is so utterly unsocial and unsociable, a few could arise who live thus, will it be possible for us not to see a true society of human beings come into existence? You see what it means to be social. It means to be unselfed. Not just deliberately practicing unselfishness. Because then I, the imperfect man, am trying to define unselfishness, and I can't. I am selfish, and selfishness I know. But that other thing, that transcendent, perfect thing, I don't know. You see? That perfect thing is transcendent. It is immeasurable. It doesn't begin, it doesn't end. Whereas all these other things begin and end. And they are everlastingly associated with sorrow, with loss in the real sense. One other point with this mindfulness. We will find that we live the life of relinquishment and renunciation. Now, most people think of relinquishment and renunciation as positive actions. I give this up. But that is an inadequate way of looking at it. And it doesn't bring about the reality of relinquishment and renunciation. I am relinquishing. But if one is really mindful and awake, and there is no consciousness of separation between that object or person and me, then I do not grasp. I have ceased to grasp. I do not grasp after anything. This doesn't mean that because I have ceased to grasp, therefore all life will be honey and roses for me. What nonsense. Look at the rose, one of the most wonderful flowers in the world. But the rose is the flower that grows upon a bush which has thorns, terrible thorns. You see the meaning of it. beauty, perfection, utter loveliness. But in manifestation, it is associated also with that which could give pain. Let the rose be. Then your finger will never be pricked by any thorn on the rose bush. You see, we suffer, don't we, in life? We suffer terribly all the time. And we seek for solutions to our suffering in terms of the removal of a painful or a difficult situation. And that removal is to be substituted by a happy situation, by the right situation. I can't demand from life. Life owes me nothing whatsoever. You see, in worldly affairs, people live and behave and act as if the world owes them a living. It doesn't. It is we who just have to live. That is all. Live. Let the life stream flow unobstructedly through ourselves. Don't demand, don't grasp. And it may entail a considerable amount of painful, difficult, sorrowful experience. That cannot be helped. That is how it is. If there is this transformation, this purification of the mind, this transformation of the mode of awareness, then you will find a curious thing happening. You won't become insensitive to pain and sorrow, but you will find an extraordinary faculty within you released, the faculty to absorb anything and everything that comes without your inner poise being disturbed. Your inner poise, remember. That doesn't mean that you will therefore experience sensations of pleasure or joy. Once this inner poise becomes a reality, then you will awaken to a peace and a joy which this world hasn't got to give you. It hasn't got it in order to give it to you. It is from within yourself. It is a new dimension of being and consciousness. What will happen is that the power of life will function unobstructedly through you who are poised and at peace and compassionate and wise. This power of life will function through you and heal everything. It won't transform it into any particular shape which your desire may raise up. Desire is a mistake. There is no need to desire. Do we desire air and light and so on? It is there. Do we desire? Well, sometimes air may be denied us, sometimes light may be denied us. But take space. Does anybody desire space? Space is there absolutely and eternally. Don't desire. It is so. That is all. And you see, whilst this sort of thing because of your intellectual assent with it, remains only an idea, perhaps a very pleasing idea, an inspiring idea maybe, an encouraging idea. As long as it remains only an idea, it fails to work as it should work, as it would naturally and spontaneously work, if it is not only an idea, but a real understanding. Understanding is the idea, the reality hidden in the idea, come to life and functioning freely and spontaneously. Quite a different thing, isn't it? Is not this the golden key? Does not this unlock the secret of true happiness, of the really joyful state, the thing which I cannot define and I should not try to define? The moment I try to define the infinite, well, I suffer for my folly. It's not what I thought it would be. You are so different from what I imagined you were, or what I think you ought to be. You see, so the sorrow of human relationships going wrong. And when they go wrong, I always try to put the other fellow right. Forgetting that every single one of us, within himself, is an impregnable fortress. I cannot enter into the other person's mind and heart. I cannot storm that citadel. I can change myself. And in the changing myself, realizing poise and non-grasping within myself, release a mysterious spiritual energy which attracts the other person in some way or other. And unbeknown as regards the ways in which it happens, that other person changes and harmony can come into being. I've known things like this in my lifetime through experience. So there is peace. A relationship is a living process, but we always want it to be a static thing. We have been so entrapped by the fairy tales, and they lived happily ever afterwards. And immediately the mind conjures up the picture. This, and that, there, that's the picture of happiness. But you and I are constantly changing ourselves. And therefore that picture won't hold good. When I was the dustman on the road, I saved up a lot of money for those days and bought a mini car. I thought I was a mighty fellow. But then after a little while, my greed got the better of me. Oh, mini car won't do. I must have a Ford. And the Ford became a Humber, and the Humber became a Rolls Royce. And this is the usual idiotic story, isn't it, of mankind? Remember Puck, he's your greatest friend, when he said, "Lord, what fools these mortals be." But if we see the folly, if we really see it, that folly is dissipated by the act of seeing. The moment you see that, yes, oh, what a fool I have been, this is not the right way to do it, you immediately see the right way then. So, question yourselves, am I mindful in the right way? Am I non-grasping so that all that is unessential is naturally and spontaneously relinquished and renounced? The true asceticism comes into being. The falling away of whatsoever is unessential for human fulfillment. Because you have seen the truth and the reality of human fulfillment. And that natural falling away is the true asceticism, which has no association with self-inflicted pain or misery or anything like that. And then life comes to fulfillment. Think of these things. When we meet again in June, we'll start a sort of a new road.